Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of not only the books that I have authored, but some articles that I have written that you might be interested in and tell you how to access them. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing to prepare resources that I think should be helpful to you, our listeners. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there information describing the books I have authored. One of them co-authored with my daughter, The Finality of Jesus Christ. It's a very important book. And if anybody will let the Scriptures answer their questions about whether there are many ways to God, this will be decisive. Another very important book I've written is Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times. I've written a book on marriage. Should help a lot of people if both are serious about walking with God in their marriage, Marriage Without Remorse, Rules for the Road. And finally, one about the pastoral ministry would be good for elders and leaders, too. Dispatches from the Front Lines, Reflections on the Glory and Grind of Pastoral Ministry. On top of that, on the same website, you'll see a tab that says Articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there are some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice after all. That has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others. I'm not a regular blogger, but when things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. We continue our exposition of 2 Samuel. We're in the midst of 2 Samuel chapter 6, where David is trying to bring the Ark of God into the city of Jerusalem so that the symbol of his presence will be with David there. But he's had some difficulties. This narrative is designed to show us the heart that David had for God. And David, more than anything, wanted to honor God and have that which symbolized God's presence among his people there in Jerusalem with him, the king. So he made elaborate preparations to bring the ark from its temporary repose in the house of a Levite by the name of Abinadab. And in the process of bringing the ark on a new cart, and it was full of pomp and circumstance, at one point the oxen apparently stumbled. The ark almost got pitched, and Uzzah reached up to stay the ark, and he was struck dead. David was stupefied, and he was mortified on that occasion. David was afraid of the Lord that day, verse 9. David said in exasperation, "Well, how can the ark of God come to me? It was so sacred, it was like crystal." David was, at that moment, unwilling to move the ark of God into the city of David with him. David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. Thus the ark of the Lord remained there at the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, 3 months. Meanwhile, the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all of his household. Well, word got back to David after 3 months, saying, you know, the Lord has really blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him. That was all providential. The Lord wanted that message to get to David on account of the ark of God. So David takes a new run at it. He had gotten the message. The Lord had established the point that he wanted to make. a point that needed to be made to Israel, that he is indeed a holy God. David knew that. But the nation didn't know that so much, and even in David, the Lord wanted the whole thing to go from aha to aha. Whoa! We explained what was wrong in the case of Uzzah. So that is all behind us. We won't go over that again. And so it was that when the bearers of the ark of the Lord had gone six paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling. And David was dancing before the Lord with all of his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. And David and all the house of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of a trumpet. Very impressive, very ceremonial, a lot of pomp and circumstance, even more so than the previous time. And it happened that as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window. She saw David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Stop right there. There was no way that David was going to allow himself as king of Israel to lead the procession, this renewed procession, and more or less upstage the Lord by turning out for the event in all of his royal vestments. He was not going to call more attention to his magisterial appearance than to the Ark of God. It was, if you put it so, the main player, for it represented God's presence. So David, with a heart that pleased God, leveled himself with all the people. He did it by stripping himself of his royal dignity. He turned out wearing only a linen ephod. A linen ephod was a garment worn by humble priests, not majestic kings. Though David was not a priest per se, that is, he was not of the priestly family, as leader of the procession, he was functioning as the head of a priestly nation, Exodus 19:6. And his chosen uniform for this occasion reflected that. His joyous dancing before the Lord was an expression of holy enthusiasm, as someone put it. And his actions in this way, laying aside as they did his kingly reserve and royal clothing, those actions put him squarely as a humble worshiper on the level with the rest of the people. And that self-humiliation greatly honored God and pleased the Lord. However, it certainly did not please David's wife, the daughter of Saul, Michal, who we find reproached him severely for so lowering himself and soiling his kingly majesty. We read in verse 20, "But when David returned to bless his household, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David, and she was furious, and she said, 'How the king of Israel distinguished himself today! He uncovered himself in the eyes of his servants' maids as one of the foolish ones shamelessly uncovers himself.'" She did not mean physical nakedness, only royal nakedness. "So David said to Michal, 'It was before the Lord, who chose me above your father and above all his house, to appoint me ruler over the people, over Israel. Therefore, I will celebrate before the Lord. I will be more lightly esteemed than this, and I will be humble in my own eyes. But with the maids of whom you have spoken, with them I will be distinguished.' And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child till the day of her death." The Lord, of course, struck her. Michal was all about appearances before the eyes of men. David was all about appearances in the eyes of God. He had it right. She had it wrong. Michal was haughty before God. David was humble before the Lord. She wanted to magnify David. David wanted to magnify God. Now, by way of application, folks, in principle, we can emulate Michal any time we hold back or restrain ourselves in appropriate expressions of worship in public, whenever we allow ourselves to be inhibited by fear of what others will think of us or say about us, than just letting go of our pride, humbling ourselves, and saying or doing whatever we know in our hearts is right before God, whether it is offering to Him public praise and thanksgiving, singing out joyfully to the Lord, getting on our knees, or speaking out for Christ, you name it. I think about that a lot. And in that regard, though there's a lot of fraud in all of our sects, S-E-C-T-S, I think in some respects our charismatic brethren are a good example of the positive in this regard. I want to say that again because I want us to think about it. Lots of times when we go to worship, We are so self-conscious, we are so proud, and so reserved in our expression of worship, so concerned about what others will think about us, that we fail to render to God the worship that is doing. I mean, what we feel in our hearts, that I think is where we're in danger of the McCall syndrome. We emulate her, I say, any time we hold back or restrain ourselves in appropriate expressions of worship in public. The Spirit is moving us. Whenever we allow ourselves to be inhibited by fear of what others think or say about us, rather than just letting go of our pride and humbling ourselves and just saying and doing whatever we know in our hearts is right before God, that may be offering Him public praise and thanksgiving or singing out joyfully to the Lord or getting on our knees or speaking out for Christ, you name it. And that honors God. He does not want us to be proud before Him and thinking about conforming to the expectations of others rather than conforming to His own. Years ago, I was speaking at a weekend conference in a church in California. It's a very, very interesting church, in this case a charismatic church, full of some really, really bright people. I'd like to say more about it, but the two pastors there had been prominent in the 60s revolution early on, and both had come to know Christ and their families, and they were doing a great work there. On a Sunday morning, I'd been there a couple of days, on a Sunday morning I was to speak, but I didn't sit down on the front row. I sat back on the right as we faced the pulpit, about three-quarters of the way down. I just wanted to observe, and off to my left was a young couple. The guy looked like he had gotten off the back of a big Harley. He was a big dude, not so long and tall, but probably, I'd say, 6 foot or 6 foot one, and he had muscles on his guns about as big as my thighs, and he was tattooed up, and he had a girlfriend with him, I presume a girlfriend, possibly his wife, but they were there, and she was very petite. It was kind of an odd couple, and they were well back in the congregation. It wasn't for show or anything like that. And I happened to glance out of the corner of my eye just past my wife on my left. And there they were both down on their knees as people were praising and singing to God. It was impressive. I don't mean it's the first time I ever saw anything like that, but here was a guy that, you know, would have been a macho man. But he wasn't being a macho man before God. There he was, just spontaneously getting down on his knees in the spirit of worship. That was not the McCall syndrome in any shape or form. We can also find ourselves afflicted with the McCall complex whenever, in a worship context, we seize the moment to deflect attention from the worship of God, deflect attention from the ministry of His Word, by deliberately drawing attention to ourselves. That's what she wanted David to do, to turn out in all his royal regalia. One can do this by one's manner of dress, whether it is overdone or sometimes underdone. Any of us who do anything in the way of public worship, to appear before God and call attention to ourselves are relatives of McCall. If you will watch some of the abominable preachers on some of these cable channels, you will see some of them dressed in the most fantastic get-ups, bejeweled with rings and gold chains and I don't know what all. Clearly, they see themselves as the main feature, not their message. Everything about their dress says, look at me, 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 me. Others, I see, are just the opposite. A while back, I saw a guy, more than once, on a cable channel, a guy who was going to the other extreme, but nevertheless sending a message by his dress that foiled the message he spoke. He appeared rather squat. He must have weighed 250 pounds. He was overflowing a bit like a lava dome. He was outfitted in tennis, and these cut-off fatigues. Now, there was nothing wrong with that get-up, per se. It had been perfectly fine for a camping trip. But hey, in a church service, when we're coming before God to worship Him, or at a funeral, or even a wedding, that kind of get-up was clearly inappropriate. It was somebody saying, hey, look at me up here. Am I cool or what? Hey, you young people out there, am I with it? What do you think? That's pathetic. Unlike a lot of men, I actually like a nice suit. Don't always wear one when I'm in the pulpit, but more often than not. My father, who was a working man, always felt he ought to go into the presence of God looking his best. But that, too, can become a vanity thing that falls right into the proud McCall syndrome. Many years ago, a dear lady in our congregation gave me a diamond tie pin, and if I recall, diamond cufflinks. I'm not real sure about the latter. Reason is, I've never worn them. Why? Well, while I do resonate with what my dad said to a certain extent, kind of like to come before the Lord and represent him well in my appearance, I just don't feel that when I come to minister the Word of God, that is any time for the servant of the Word of God to be standing up there glittering with diamond paraphernalia. When I represent the Lord in public worship, you see, it's no time for me to steal the show, if you know what I mean. It's about Christ. It's not about Jim or Joe or Jack or Bill or Harry or anybody else. I don't want to be like some of these fans, you see, when a sports reporter is making a statement or conducting an interview, and there they are, stupidly, in the background, trying to get some face time with the camera, distracting attention from what is really important to the audience. And we can be like that. Well, McCall wanted David to be in that mode. He was the king. And she wanted him to showboat on this festival occasion, this celebrative occasion, as the king. And David said, "The show's not about me, dear. It's about the Lord. I'm going to humble myself, and we're going to focus on what we ought to be focusing on." Well, these are things that I believe we ought to think about in worship, both in the pulpit and in the pew. David knew, as I've said a dozen times, it was not about him. It was about the Lord. He would have really understood the words of John the Baptist relative to Jesus. He must increase, I must decrease. Those infected with the McCall complex care more about perceptions of themselves in a worship environment than the promotion of Christ and the honest worship of God. I think what we've all got to do is just steer clear of her spirit and get on board with David's and examine ourselves from time to time. Well, David is having none of her reproach. He tells us that in verse 21. What he did was spot on, and the king knew it. He was not defensive in the least. It was before the Lord, woman, before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all of his house. Maybe that should tell you something about how wrong your attitude is. Those words are not there, but they are implied. The Lord appointed me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel, and therefore, when it comes to honoring him, don't you think for one minute that I'm going to stand on my royal dignity and worry myself too much about how people are perceiving me or reacting to what I do. You see, McCall, I know, maybe you don't, but I know who the real king is, and therefore I will not hesitate, but I will celebrate before the Lord. To tell you the truth, if it is necessary to appropriately worship the Lord, I'm willing to be even more lightly esteemed than this. That is, more lightly esteemed by your kind who just don't get it. I refuse to take on an air of royal self-importance. No, McCall, I will be humble in my own eyes. You'd do well to be humble also. But let me let you in on a little secret that seems to blow right past your proud mind. Those little maidens of Israel, you're worried about thinking less of me because I'm not standing on my royal dignity and out there in common clothing. Well, the truth is, with them, whose heart is in the right place, I will be distinguished, if not in your own misguided eyes. The Lord showed his disapproval of the spirit of McCall, the daughter of Saul. She was his daughter in spirit as well as in flesh. Her punishment was her own deep humiliation in terms of the cultural values of that era. The text tells us she had no child to the day of her death. That was a stroke of God. She was a royal pain. People of her proud spirit are never an asset in the work of the kingdom, but there are a lot of them around, and churches are full of them. That's no surprise. Our churches, as you've heard me say and as the New Testament teaches, they're full of wheat and they're full of tares. They're full of believers, they're full of make-believers. That has always been the case, always will be. We've just got to make sure we know which one we belong to. The Lord uses even those to test the spirits of others around them. He uses even those to clarify choices and to force us to do things the Lord's way or their way. So watch out for the McCalls of this world. Watch out for the McCalls in a church environment. You don't want to be one. It's a thing for self-examination. You want to stay within your game, so to speak. We're certain kinds of people. We don't want to go out and emulate others who are different from us. Let me give you kind of an illustration. Sometimes we can be driven by guilt in this area and we don't want to go there. I'm a very passionate person. I distinguish that from emotional. I'm passionate in the sense that I feel things deeply, but I'm not all that emotional. I love football, for example. When I would go to a ball game, whether it was in Denver with the Denver Broncos, where we lived for many years, or going to a Portland Trailblazers game here in Portland, I'm not one of those who's always jumping up and yelling and screaming and that kind of thing. That is not me. I'm a pretty outgoing and friendly person in a lot of ways, but there's in me a lot of reserve. Like a lot of people, I come out the more I'm at home. If I walk into a church, I don't walk to the front row. Not because it's not a good place to go. If a church is strange to me, I'm probably going to go near a back row and probably going to look for an exit because things may get real hinky. I'm serious. So I'm kind of like that. To give you a good example, when I was in seminary, we had the opportunity to get free tickets to the Cotton Bowl and watch a lot of great Southwest Conference football, Texas, Oklahoma, go over and see Don Meredith play in his college days. So all we had to do is go sell programs, and after a quarter or so, we could go in and have free tickets and go to the top of the stands. We didn't have seats, but we could go stand, standing room only, and watch the games. That was appealing to a lot of guys, and I was one of them. But while I had intense feelings about the games, when I'm in that public environment, now if I'm home around my own TV, it might be something a little different. I may say, why did you do something stupid like that? You know, that kind of thing. But I had to give that up after a while. Why is that? Well, because I had a problem that most people didn't seem to have. Other people could go out, guys say, programs, programs, programs. That sense chills up my back to this day. You know, I just can't bring myself to do that. I feel so silly. I feel so stupid. That is me. That has nothing to do with worshiping the Lord or anything like that. That's just not within my personality structure. And as much as I wanted to see those games, I didn't do that. So I kind of test myself about that kind of thing when it comes to my religious expression, to my expression of worship. I stay within my own personality. And if this is not something I would do selling soap, it's something I'm not going to do in a religious environment. It's not me to stand and sway and wave my hands. It's not me to shout out in a public service. It's not me in any environment to shout out. But it is for some people. So I think you get the idea. Ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? In my normal environment, well, be that in church. But if the Spirit of God is pecking you on the shoulder and telling you to do something to praise the Lord, to speak out for the Lord, or to do whatever, to sing, then please do so. Don't hold back because of what others may think around you. Don't be a macaw. And don't go to the service stealing the attention that belongs to the Lord and to the Lord alone. People do that. I've seen people, not so much these days, and particularly not in the West Coast, but in my younger days when people were more accustomed to dressing up, I've seen people come in styling it. They walk in the door, and your eye cannot help but go to them. They're overdressed, and somebody coming in a cocked hat, and you just say, oh, lady, really, really, pride is all over that get-up. Can't we take it down a few notches? Don't be a macaw. Well, there's a great lesson there. It's ancient stuff, but the principles that should guide us are right there in the particulars of that historical narrative. So look in the mirror, we go to worship, and say, I don't want to be a macaw. Whatever I do, I don't want to be like her. None of that stuff about me. Is there any of it about me? Lord, help me to shed it. Help me to get rid of my pride in that regard and to get rid of my ego. Thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach. Be sure. Yeah.